male and female sex differences, contraception, transgenderism. These are some of the topics covered in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January, Ethics of Sex, From Taboo to Delight. You can find out more at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Ethics of Sex contributors include Issues Etc. guests Ben Mays, Tom Eckstein, and Richard Stuckwish. Ethics of Sex, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January.
The back alley of abortions operating today inside so-called legal abortion clinics.
What I think makes evolutionary theory bad science today is we're not allowing an honest testing of it.
If you're a Christian and you're going to oppose same-sex marriage, we're going to put you in Bigotville and you have to stay there. And if we catch you outside in likable land, then we're going to be very angry about this and punish you for kind of coming into our territory.
I think the liturgy really is children's church. You know, it's especially true when you see people who've lost their memory, who've lost their sight, who don't know how to read. Children who don't know how to read, they can all participate in the liturgy.
Latin teachers and future seminarians. Love, Issues, etc. Pater Noster, qui es in caelis, sanctificat or nomen tuum.
It is true that some of the most rewarding things in life are often the most difficult things to do. It's not just the sense of accomplishment after having achieved something difficult. What if that sense of accomplishment is never really fully realized? What if, like they used to say, you know, a cowboy's work is never done? The same is true of mothers and fathers, and I think especially of mothers. It's get up and do the same thing over and over again. The progress is incremental. The labor is difficult, and the goals, the payoff, long term. There's no doubt about that. And there are myths that float around both in our culture and in the minds of mothers, sadly, that can ruin all of that. The daily sense of accomplishment isn't necessarily always there, but there is a sense that something is being done, something's being produced and made in the home. We're going to be talking about myths that ruin motherhood. Anna Musselman's going to join us. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. Coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. After a conversation with Anna on myths that ruin motherhood, we'll talk about Disney's treatment of boys. Allison Hull will join us. She's written for The Federalist a piece called Why Does Disney Hate Boys So Much? Their male characters are losers. Stephanie Barclay brings us an update on a piece of federal regulation that would have required doctors to perform gender transition procedures, even on children. Then Terry Mattingly joins us. We'll talk about the top religion story, or really the angle of the 2017 religious coverage, which is doubtless going to be, as Sarah Pulliam Bailey suggests in a recent Washington Post piece, religious liberty in various forms. Then Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer joins us for our series, Christ in the Old Testament Today, Psalm 29, Ascribe to the Lord Glory. Joining us to talk about myths that ruin motherhood, Anna Musselman. She's a mother of two toddlers and author of an article for The Federalist titled Stop Whining and Learn to Love Being a Mother. Welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks so much.
You say that there is a myth that is, in your words, as fatalistic as any pagan superstition that ruins it for so many mothers. What is that myth?
I think it is the idea that if we as mothers don't know how to do something, then obviously it can't be done, rather than believing that we can go out and learn new skills and learn new things. I think maybe it comes from the idea that because motherhood is natural, it's natural to have children, it should all come naturally, and if it doesn't come naturally, it must not exist. Whereas I think we need to realize that motherhood is actually something that is hard enough to require a skill set, and it's a skill set that our culture doesn't always communicate very well to women and to men as well as prospective fathers. So it's something that we can actually, we can go out and educate ourselves.
Give us some examples of how this myth kind of plays out in raising kids, the idea that if I don't know how to do something, it obviously is impossible. Where does it play out with the kids?
I think you see it a lot in in homes where the parents have kind of given up on some particular thing. You know, they just haven't been able to figure out how to get their child to come when they call or to do what they say, or they haven't been able to figure out how to keep the house clean. Just how do you stay on top of that organization? How do you keep groceries in the fridge? You know, how do you stop food from spoiling? How do you keep enough food in there? And I think some people, in despair, just decide that, oh, well, obviously, these things can't be done. And sometimes they respond with a lot of anger when other people say it can be done. They take that as sort of a personal attack on themselves, as a comment on their own value as mothers or as parents. And you see a lot of anger online when women sort of dare to say that, you know, motherhood is compatible with a lot of other achievements. And sometimes, you know, people are kind of brash. You know, there was a woman who made a lot of headlines in the past by posing her, you know, her very fit body with her children and saying, you know, what's your excuse? And, you know, maybe that's sort of can be a little bit annoying, but it's interesting that rather than wanting to learn, oh, you know, so how do you fit in, you know, staying fit or whatever the accomplishment is with having children, a lot of people get very angry at that message.
I'm intrigued by something you mentioned before, and that is because motherhood is natural, and especially among women of your generation who have re-embraced the desire to be mothers, they want to be mothers and they like the idea of being mothers, then faced with the reality of how really hard that job, that vocation is. Is there a tendency to idealize it?
Perhaps so. Perhaps, and perhaps a lot of women feel like, because motherhood is this wonderful, glorious thing, it ought to come easy, and therefore I must be broken, or I must be doing something wrong when things are not going well, rather than realizing that, you know, every mother faces challenges and needs to learn how to overcome these challenges, how to deal with children who do not think the way you think they should, or how to deal with life that just isn't going the way you think it should.
You say that it's a pretty simple truth. People enjoy what they're good at. Does it take hard work to become good at being a mom?
I think so. I think some people are blessed with a little bit more prep work going in, people who've seen very functional, wonderful families, people who've had the benefit of growing up in large families and, you know, seeing how their parents raise their siblings or seeing other families in church. And some people have less background. But I think sometimes it can be helpful to us as moms to think about motherhood in comparison to other jobs. You know, if we went out and became a teacher, or we became a librarian, or became a lawyer or a doctor, we would expect there to be a very steep learning curve at first, and we would expect things to be really tough. And I think sometimes thinking about motherhood in the same way can be very helpful.
You also talk about kind of ridding yourself mentally of the false dichotomies, the all or nothing. If I can't have a home that looks like the mother's home in the magazine, why try? Talk about that.
Right. I think there can be even sort of a guilty pleasure in sort of acting perhaps as if the world expects something very, very unrealistic from us. You know, oh, well, you know, the magazine portrays this wonderful, perfect, beautiful home where everything is made out of crystal and white cambric, and, you know, that absolutely cannot happen in my house, and therefore I'll just never vacuum. You know, we can use these kinds of false dichotomies to almost comfort ourselves by making it appear impossible that we can do a good job.
You say that we need to reestablish our homes as places where something valuable and productive is done and is made. What are you talking about?
I think that we won't have the energy or the motivation to try to become good at the skills of motherhood if we don't see it as really important, something that is really worth doing and worth doing well. And I think that culturally, in a lot of families, home has become about consumption. And I think it's a very valid thing when women look around and they begin to feel a little hollow about the fact that here they are just kind of supervising the consumption of goods, you know, providing stuff for everybody and shuffling stuff around. And no wonder they're not terribly motivated to spend more time at home or learn how to do this better. I think we need to realize that the home is a place where we are serving each other, and therefore we are creating. We're here teaching our children and making a home. And we need to involve our children in that. We're raising children, training them to become certain types of people. We're giving them valuable life skills. We're doing all kinds of good and important things.
You also point out that motherhood isn't about luck. What do you mean by that?
I think probably any mother can tell a story of somebody coming up to them and commenting about luck. And my mother, when I was little, I remember somebody coming up to her and saying, "Oh, you know, you're so lucky that your children will wear tights and shoes when it's cold. You know, oh, my little girls insist on only wearing sandals all the time." My mom thought that was pretty funny, you know, the idea that luck dictates how children dress or whether children will listen to their mother. And I think sometimes we use the idea that our life is based on luck, again, as an excuse or as a comfort if we don't know how to do anything different. But it's certainly much more encouraging to realize that we can actually invest hard work in learning how to do things as mothers. These things are not based on luck. We're not the victims of bad luck. We can learn to do them differently and better.
We have our daughter and son-in-law and grandchild living with us. And so I'm getting to see motherhood in the first year of the child's life coming up this week.
Mm-hmm.
Motherhood firsthand again after about 25 years. Brand new motherhood for the first time. And, you know, this is an online generation, Anna, and they spend a lot of time looking online, and sometimes it's helpful advice, and sometimes it just kind of grinds you into dust. What would your advice be there?
Well, I think when we're looking online and seeing images of other people's lives, it's important to remember that we're only seeing a little piece of it. And if we get advice from someone online, we really don't know how that advice is working out in their own life. So I find it very helpful to actually talk to real people when we have questions about parenting, and talk to real people when we're trying to gauge what is normal. A lot of times as moms, we really want to know, like, is this typical that my child doesn't sleep, or my child is doing this or that, you know, or is this something that I should be doing something about? And if you talk to a real mom at church, you know, their kid will be right there maybe picking his nose or doing whatever he might be doing, and you'll realize that, you know, you'll see the full picture. You know, this mom maybe has some wonderful tips on sleep training or attachment parenting or whatever it may be, and that may be, she may have a really strong skill set there, but you'll be able to see that just like anyone else, she has weaknesses in other areas.
Well, is a lot of it trial and error?
Yeah, I think so. Certainly nobody else has parented our children yet, so we do have to figure out what will actually work for us.
Talk about, as you say, the need for grace that mothers need to be aware of. As with all the hard work, with all of the expectations, with all the successes and failures, the need for forgiveness.
We absolutely do have that need for forgiveness. And I think that's where being a Lutheran is such an encouragement, is such a blessing, because when we talk about learning these skills as mothers and doing better, we're doing it in the context of knowing that we are forgiven for all the sins that we're committing against our children, and they are forgiven for the sins they may be committing against us. We're doing this in this context of grace. And of course we're going to need it, because of course we're going to mess up and do things wrong. And as we live in the knowledge that we are God's forgiven child, we can do this joyfully.
One of the best pieces of advice you write about, and I hadn't even thought about it, is to get beyond, as you say, the modern bubble entirely and read about how women lived out motherhood at different times. What are you talking about? Why is that so helpful?
I think when we read about motherhood in other time periods, when we see what, you know, Ma Ingalls or another historic woman would have done, it can really help us to see that motherhood is both natural and something that is learned through a lifetime of practice. We can see people who are coming to motherhood in completely different settings with completely different starting ideas of how life should be, and we can see the way they do things.
And then finally, you start your column by talking about how mothers often discuss family and children in the mother's forums. And there's a lot of sarcasm and whining. Why is that just one of the worst things that a mother can do?
I think it's taking something that can be healthy. You know, women do need commiseration, and it's good to be able to laugh about our lives and talk about it with somebody who can understand, and twisting it, because it's putting it in, we're going into a situation where everybody is speaking of motherhood in a negative way, and where the culture of the group dictates that everything is going to be negative and needs to be negative. It becomes a place where women use motherhood as an example of the injustice of the universe and an injustice of their lives, and there's really no encouragement to be had there.
Anna Mussman is a mother of two toddlers. She has authored an article for The Federalist titled Stop Whining and Learn to Love Being a Mother. You can read it at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Anna, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
When we come back from this break, we're going to talk a little bit about, well, Disney has a campaign called Dream Big Princess. We're going to talk about that campaign and Disney's treatment of boys. Allison Hull, author of a piece for The Federalist, Why Does Disney Hate Boys So Much, will be our guest.
Mama tried to raise me better. But her pleading I denied. That leaves only me to blame, 'cause mama tried.
Thank you for helping us make Budget and for more than 4 million downloads of Issues Etc. in 2016. Thanks to your support, Lutheran Public Radio has been independent and in the black for almost 9 years. You've heard us say, now only our listeners can cancel us, and we mean it. Thanks for listening, thanks for your prayers, and thanks for your financial support of Issues Etc. live and on demand, and for our 24/7 talk and music stations. We're looking forward to partnering with you in 2017.
Memoria Press invites all Issues Etc. listeners to explore our Simply Classical curriculum, a set of full-year academic curriculum packages for children with learning challenges. Our classical writing program and our Christian studies are now based on your favorite CPH Bible storybooks. To learn more, visit classicalspecialneeds.com and use promo code LPR to save on your initial purchase. That's classicalspecialneeds.com.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Come listen to Drs. Alvin Schmidt and Roland Elke at the 3rd Annual Concordia Apologetics Conference, Cultures in Collision, Faith and a Fractured World, this March 3rd and 4th at Concordia University, Wisconsin. You can register online at www.cuw.edu/apologetics or call 262-243-4343. That's the Concordia Apologetics Conference, March 3rd and 4th at Concordia University, Wisconsin.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7, LutheranPublicRadio.org.